Choice and Control is a podcast celebrating meaningful inclusion of people with disability in our communities. Brought to you by Carers Queensland, your NDIS local area coordination partner in the community. Each episode provides a conversation space for people with disability, their families and carers, to share their stories with you. We also hear from members of the wider community, local businesses and community leaders who share information, ideas and possibilities to give you more opportunity and more choice and control in your life. Well, it's been 4 years since the Summer Paralympic Games in Tokyo during a time of COVID lockdown. The 2020 Games featured the highest number of athletes ever to compete at a Paralympics, with 4,403 participants, including 1,853 female para-athletes, the highest number in the history of the Games. 4 years on, and the Paralympics are back, bigger than ever, this time in Paris, France. And here at Carers Queensland, we're thrilled to share the stories of just some of these champions with you. In this episode, we feature two para-swimmers, Rachel Watson from Brisbane, two-time Paralympian and gold medalist who is soon off to Paris to defend her title, and a young aspiring swimmer from the Sunshine Coast, 17-year-old Tian Holt, whose dream it is to compete on this world stage. First up, we meet 32-year-old Rachel Watson from Brisbane, who took time out of her busy training schedule to have a chat with us before flying to France to compete in swimming at the 2024 Paralympics. After acquiring Guillain-Barré syndrome at 21 years of age, swimming formed part of Rachel's physiotherapy and gave her an independence and freedom like no other, eventually leading to great success as a champion swimmer for Australia. I started by asking Rachel about her journey so far and how she's feeling about the upcoming Games in Paris.
Yeah, I'm feeling really excited. It's definitely hitting me now watching the Olympics on TV and seeing all the swimmers in the pool and going, wow, I'm going to be there very, very soon and I'm going to have my moment and the same excitement that they're feeling will come on to me very soon. So it definitely makes it feel surreal when you see people doing it right now. I've had a really good journey so far. It's definitely had its challenges, but I've been quite lucky with obviously some of my successes in the pool. I've been to Rio and Tokyo where I won gold in the 50-metre freestyle, and there's obviously an expectation by some, and then there's, I guess, a lot of determination from me to try and do it again in Paris. It's very hard to know whether that will happen or not, because I'm now an S3 swimmer, so I've gone down a classification because of the deterioration in my medical condition. So it's going to be more of a challenge, but it doesn't mean it's impossible. So I think I just look at it and see that I've just got to try and really work out where my weaknesses are in the race, and hopefully on the day it will all fall into line and I'll be able to produce a really good swim. I guess one thing that's, you know, working in my advantage is because I've actually got a second event offered for my classification now, which is 100-metre freestyle. When you train for that sort of swim, it then makes your other distance, which is shorter, possibly a bit better technically, because you have to try and master it over one lap. And if you can do it over two, then potentially you can do it over one. Obviously, a lot of different factors come into play, but I think this time is going to be a little bit of a different journey, but I'm very excited to see what will happen.
Yeah, watching the Paralympics in a few weeks is going to be so exciting. We're going to be watching you and following your journey. So when are you heading off to Paris?
So I leave for Paris on the 9th of August. So I have about a week left in Brisbane, and then I head off. And then we'll do a staging camp in France for about 2 weeks. And then after that, we can then enter the Paralympic Village in Paris. So there's a specific date that all the countries have to wait for. until the village is opened by security and it's all set up for all the Paralympic athletes and teams to live in. So it's sort of like being a bit of a kid in Disneyland, you know, waiting for the doors to open and seeing all the magic and still realising that, you know, you've got a goal to achieve and you're not there just to have a really fun time. But it's very, very exciting compared to Tokyo 2020 where, you know, we had COVID and we were in a bubble. We couldn't walk around the village. Everything was very strict and it had to be. And it may revert back a little bit like that this time because we are seeing some COVID positive cases in the Olympic Village in Paris. So I think potentially the rules for the Paralympic team may be a little bit different. But if it means on race day you're really fresh and you're healthy and you stay well, then I think that's a good enough sacrifice to make.
For sure. When you were in Tokyo and there weren't any, you know, the audiences, like, was that a really different environment for you to compete in?
It was and it wasn't. And I know that might sound a bit weird to say that, but often what I've found is with para events in Australia, there's usually not that many that will attend if they're just as a sole event. When they're integrated with able-bodied events, we do get more of a crowd. But also we were sort of conditioning ourselves to be around an environment where there wasn't anyone there. So, you know, that would mean like maybe training or doing some time trials where there's no crowd. And then you're used to going, I don't have that extra roar from a crowd, that I'm okay with that and I don't need it to motivate me to say come home in the last 10 metres faster and stronger. And look, some people really struggle with that. I didn't. But I do know there are people who they rely on that crowd to really push them through. So I think I was lucky in that space. It didn't really.
You're certainly going to be getting a crowd in Paris, Rachel.
Oh, the crowd in Paris is something out of this world, really. Like, they're so noisy for the heats, and it's just a heat swim for a lot of these swimmers, and I haven't even made the final. And what they're saying at the moment, the energy and the atmosphere, is usually you wouldn't see that much excitement from a crowd for a heat swim. So the fact people are going electric for a heat swim, it means that for a final, it's just going to be something that we probably haven't experienced for many, many years. World champs is always a really good crowd. The Paralympics or Olympics, it really levels up a notch. And, you know, you would have to literally be, I guess, someone who maybe had like a hearing impairment to not hear the crowd. Otherwise, you could have, you know, wax in your ears and you'd still be able to hear the crowd. That's literally how noisy they're going to be. So it's very, very exciting. You just, the only thing you've got to do is not get distracted by it.
So how do you handle pressure and maintain focus during high-stakes events like the Paralympics, Rachel?
I think that's where you use your heat swim to learn from and to experience the whole regime of, you know, getting up on race day, having the nerves, you know, eating the right thing for breakfast. Potentially the bus might be late getting you from the village to the pool, working out, you know, where you've got to go when you're in the pool, because on race day it's very different to how it is on a training day. So you really use the heat as your practice run because you won't get another opportunity. So then when you go into the final, you've got this familiar feeling in your mind going, I've done this before because I did it this morning. And I think when it comes to pressure, for me personally, I try to avoid it where I can. So, you know, I'll stay off social media. I won't ring anybody on the day. And, you know, I'll talk to people maybe days before so that they still have their moment with me and they still know they're appreciative in the journey, but they're not getting that call when I need to focus just on myself. And I think just really trusting the team that I've got around me to go, they've got my back, because you have to be able to trust them. And if you don't trust them, then that's going to be a problem. So a lot of it comes, especially when it's a Paralympic year, a lot of the process we've already done before. So the team's the same, the staff are the same. So there's not too much different things that you've actually got to learn. And that really does help with handling pressure, because if you're thrown into an environment and you've got new staff, new athletes, new experiences, it's a lot more to take in. And that's where a lot of people are going to crumble.
Do you think your experience there will really, well, it will benefit you, won't it?
Look, I'm hoping it will. I think the plus for me is obviously I've done a couple of Paralympic Games before. I've done a few World Champs before. So I do have that personal experience. I think the only thing that I'm not quite prepared for is obviously I'm going in to the Paralympics as a defending champion. So everyone in that race is wanting to beat me. They're not, they're not caring about anyone else in that race. The only person they really want to knock off is going to be me, because any country, they want to try and take the win, obviously. You know, and there's a couple of girls that could win that race. So nothing is guaranteed. It's often easier going in when you're not known and you're the complete rookie and almost no one's expecting it of you, and then you just pull it out of the bag when it counts. So I've just almost got to try and not think about it and not see it as, oh, I'm trying to win another gold medal. I just need to see it as if it's any other race on any other day, and the colour will be determined by my technique, you know. So you've got to not focus on, oh, I need to get a certain time to get a certain colour medal. So it really is about changing your mindset, because otherwise you'll work yourself up before you even start.
How often do you find that the mental preparation is as important as the physical training?
Oh, it's huge. The only thing is with your mental preparation, you can't do a lot of it here in Brisbane. You can only do part of it, and then the rest of it you've really just got to experience in the moment at the big competition. Identify if you did struggle to manage your emotions or if you got caught up in the moment, so that you learn how to, I guess, turn off those thoughts and also learn how to recognize them and learn how to have a strategy. And a lot of it is repetition. So having a couple of keywords and just saying those keywords in your mind all the time, so that they don't distract you from what you've got to do, but if anything, they are going to distract you from letting doubt get into your mind and letting, I guess, pressure of going, oh, there's another athlete there. Oh, they look fitter. They look faster. They look stronger. You know, I was beaten for the last 2 years. So, you know, some athletes would be thinking in their mind going, oh, but they beat me, so they're going to beat me again. So you've really just got to try and think about a couple of words and almost pep talk yourself up. And you see it in the Olympics as well. You know, the American gymnast, Simone, is like one of the best gymnasts in the whole world.
Yeah.
And they panned in on her and she said to herself, I've got this, you know, right before she was about to start and do her routine. So, I mean, everyone has something that they say to themselves, because I think they need to.
When you're pre-race and you're thinking about the swim and then you hit the water, does it change once you're in the pool?
It doesn't change too much. When I get into the water and start the race, I think I'm just trying to think about each section of the race. So I'm not thinking about the end. At the start, I'm thinking about the start. When I get to maybe 10 metres, I'm then thinking about the next 15 metres and going, right, did I get that part technically correct? Yep, keep going. If I didn't, what am I going to do to correct it and correct it quickly? And that's where you do your time trials in training and you practice when the race doesn't go correct. What do you do? How do you fix it up? Obviously, you're not going to stop and start again, but, you know, if you didn't get your start right and that first 15 metres is not where you need it to be, what can you do in the next 15 metres that is going to help you along? So a lot of it is literally practicing it over and over and over, so that if something on race day doesn't go right, when it's in the real moment, mentally you're okay with that because you've done it like that before.
I admire swimmers because of your motivation to get up at 4:30 in the morning or whatever it is and get in that pool and do all the training. How do you stay motivated during some of those more challenging times?
Well, I think having the Paralympics happen is obviously a very good motivation. And when you do get beaten internationally, you have a stronger motivation to go, well, I don't want to get beaten again. So it does push you a bit more when there is someone who is faster than you, they are stronger, potentially they are a bit more physically able than you. So that in itself is enough motivation if you ever did need motivation to keep yourself going. So I think also for me, even just looking at the medal and seeing what they look like and going, okay, I really want one of those. I'd love to be on the podium. That in itself is motivation.
Well, if we look back at your journey from the beginning, Rachel, what inspired you to pursue swimming at a competitive level?
So it all started when I ended up with Guillain-Barré syndrome. So that put me into a wheelchair. And what I found is that when I was in the water, I could move a lot better compared to when I was on dry land. So I was making more progress functionally in the water, which we do know for a lot of patients with neurological conditions, being in the water often does see them be able to do a bit more and progress a bit quicker with physiotherapy. So that in itself was enough to sort of say to me, okay, well, I am able to do a bit more for myself. I'm getting a bit better functionally. That is then helping me with physio on dry land. And then after I was able to swim again, I then pretty much said to myself, okay, I want to get a coach and just have a goal to be able to work towards getting better in the pool. And Paralympics wasn't even a thought at that stage. But then I did a race and I broke an Australian record. And I think that really spurred me on to go, okay, I might have a chance here to do something with this.
How old were you, Rachel?
Have a new focus. I was 21 when I ended up in a wheelchair. So, you know, it was a very big change for every single aspect of your life. So the other thing I also wanted is I wanted to be doing something that was out of a wheelchair because I don't enjoy being in a wheelchair. You know, I used to be able to walk and be able to do everything for myself. So when I'm in the water, I'm independent. Obviously, I need help getting to the pool. I need help getting ready, getting into the pool, all those sort of aspects. But once I'm actually in the water, I'm completely independent, you know, from one end to the other. And that's really important for me and a lot of people. So that also was just, I guess, motivation to go, okay, I'm really enjoying this. And basically we just started working towards, you know, the really basic goals in swimming and then progress from there. And then it was a really, really quick kind of journey up to the top and to Rio Paralympics. And sometimes that's how it happens for some people. And I think I was really lucky that they saw something in me and they didn't, I guess, put me into your typical development pathway where they develop you for a few years and then you progress to international, because then it would have meant Rio wouldn't have happened and I would have missed those sort of moments. So sometimes it is a very quick learning curve, and it's certainly not easy, but sometimes, you know, how I call it is sometimes the hardest moments create the most incredible things.
I'm reading here your favourite quote on the Paralympics Australia website, and you say, dream, believe, achieve. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, I don't even know where I saw it, or I don't know if I just said it to myself. I need to Google it, actually. But I think it just says to me that, you know, if you have a dream, the first step to having a dream is you've got to believe it's going to happen. You've got to believe you can do it. And then once you do that, you then work towards it. And then before you know it, you're achieving it. And if you're not achieving it, you're learning something from it. So you're still getting something out of that process. So it's not like it's going to be a missed opportunity. Because there are some dreams that I've had and they've just stayed a dream and they haven't actually taken off and nothing's sort of happened. And that's more just down to, you know, logistically it's just not been possible. So even in sport, you know, we see a lot of athletes who they have their dream and they do everything they can do to try and achieve it, but then they don't get the result on the day that they wanted. So I think those three words, they mean a lot to me, and it's something that I still think about even now. You know, when I'm going into Paris, I'm going, if I ever doubt myself, I've just got to have that dream again, you know, so that I'm not going, oh, am I ready? Can I do this? Maybe I can't do it. Maybe I'm, you know, too old. Maybe I'm not good enough, because everyone's going to have the doubt. So I think when you have the dream, it knocks the doubt out of the park.
Do you think that you'll be continuing on after Paris, Rachel?
I think so for a little bit. I don't know how long for. I'm not ruling out LA 2028, but I haven't made a decision yet about that. I think because at the moment I just want to get through Paris and focus on that.
Yeah.
And then work out, do I want to go for another 4 years or do I want to do other things? I honestly have no clue at the moment, but I do know in myself that I'm not saying no to it. Like, I'm not saying I'm going to retire after Paris, because I'm not. Whereas there are some athletes who go, this is definitely my last one, and they know that and they're happy with that. I'm not quite ready for that yet, so I definitely see myself continuing on, but I don't know how long for.
And how are you feeling for Paris? Are you feeling pumped? Are you feeling like you're ready?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, if you're not ready now, you're not really going to be ready. I've got about 5 weeks till I race. And, you know, if you're not fit, you're not going to get it in 5 weeks. That sort of thing takes months. So really now is just about maintaining all that technique, working on those little one percenters, and then hoping that on the day it'll pays off and works really well. I'm excited, but until you see the village and you're actually physically in it, it takes it to another level. But yeah, I think overall I'm trying to feel confident in my ability, but I'm also acknowledging that it's okay to feel a little bit nervous about it, because this is a really big opportunity that a lot of people don't get to do in their life. And usually when you're doing something that you really love and you're trying to do it well, you are going to be feeling a bit of pressure, you know?
Rachel, you've put in so much training to get to this point. How has your training lead up been?
It's been really good. We've been working a lot on technique, and I know I've said that a bit today, but technique when you swim is one of the most important parts of what you do. So for me, we've honestly been taking it back to basics, which a lot of people forget about. They think that when you're at this level, you don't need to do some of those more basic types of drills and sets in training, but often they're the ones that set up a good base for their foundations to then allow you to perform and hold good form over that one or two laps.
I've also interviewed an aspiring para swimmer in this podcast episode. What advice would you give to aspiring Paralympic athletes who are wanting to chase the same dream that you're chasing?
I think one of the biggest things would be have a look at the TV and watch the Paralympics and see if there's someone like you. And if there's someone with your disability and they're doing what you want to do, have a look at how they're doing their sport and take a few different tips from them and see what can you do in your home environment to replicate what they're doing. Now, the flip side of that also is everyone's an individual. There's going to be things that some people can do that you can't do or that you shouldn't be doing because you need to be doing it the best way for you and your impairment. And I think when you've got that aspiration to be a Paralympian, you've just got to make sure that you really want it. You know, there's some people that say they want it, but then they don't actually put in the work.
Rachel, I'm very aware that you've taken time out of your training schedule to meet with me. My final question today is, beyond medals and records, what legacy do you hope to leave in your sport?
I'd really like to be someone that a lot of people can look up to, and especially for people with more severe types of physical impairments who they may not even be involved in sport or exercise, and they may have been told that their disability makes it too hard for them to try something like that and that it's just not possible. There's always a way to do it, and I know some people might disagree with me on that, but I'm one of those people that will just keep going and going and going until I find a way to do it and I find the people that want to support. So I really guess I want my legacy to be that anyone who's been told that they can't do something because of their disability, or, you know, if they're a healthcare professional and they're not sure what to do and how to do it to help someone with a disability, I really want them to go, how can I think outside the box? And to realise that sometimes the answer is not in a textbook. It's not already written down, because sometimes it just hasn't been done before. And sometimes you've got to be the trailblazer and you've got to lead the way. And you might be the very first person that's done it like that, but you're going to be helping so many more people through your actions and through your dedication and your motivation. So I'd really like to try to do that if I could.
They're inspiring words, Rachel, and I would love to have a chat with you when you return from Paris, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Best of luck. We'll all be cheering you on and watching, and all the best with Paris, and thanks for talking to me today.
No worries. Thank you so much.
And that was Rachel Watson from Brisbane, two-time Paralympian and gold medalist, who's soon off to Paris to defend her title.
LAC Connect. It's a new way to stay in touch with your local area coordinator at Carers Queensland with everything you need right here on your device. It's a handy app to keep track of your LAC appointments, browse workshops and events, check out information and support, and get the latest news, stories, and podcasts. It's available on Android and iOS, so whatever device you have, you can stay in touch. Head to our website to sign up at carersqld.com.au and look for LAC Connect.
17-year-old para-athletic swimmer from the Sunshine Coast, Tian Haupt, has been competing in freestyle and butterfly for the past 18 months with great success. After being born prematurely with a right frontal lobe hemorrhage, Tian has found inspiration and success in the pool and has his sights set on the Commonwealth Games in 2026 and the Paralympics in Los Angeles in 2028. Following impressive swim meets at the Queensland State School Sports, the Queensland long course and short course events, Tian has just been invited to join the Queensland Representative School Sport 13 to 19 years swimming team to compete at the SSA 10 to 19 Swimming National Championships this year. To help him prepare for his future goal to compete on the world stage in swimming, Tian is coached by former Olympian Chris Wright and ex-national swimmer for New South Wales, Alicia Welsh. I caught up with the young aspirational swimmer on the pool deck as he prepared for his afternoon training session.
So Tian, we're here at your swimming club. We can hear the noise in the background.
Yeah.
Are you looking forward to watching the Paralympics and the Olympic swimming in a few weeks time?
Yeah, I am. I'm very excited to see my the person in my club that has been training very hard to reach the Paralympics, and I'm excited to see him swim when it comes to that.
When you watch him stage.
When I watch him swim.
When you watch him swim.
Yeah.
You said that that's one of your goals. Can you tell me about that goal to reach the Paralympics one day?
That's also one of my goals, to reach the Paralympics one day from 2026 Los Angeles Paralympics. Yeah, I've been wanting to go to the Paralympics for a pretty long time now. For my mom and dad, and then to make them proud that I've actually done something with my life instead of just sit in front of my TV playing video games. Yeah.
How long have you been doing swimming at a competitive level?
For 13 months.
And what made you interested in doing swimming at a competitive level?
I just had like dedication, and I want to reach my goal. I wanted to reach my goal, and yeah, my parents pushed me to be swimming competitively.
Which swimming stroke did you choose to swim?
Fly and freestyle.
And why did you choose those?
Because they're probably one of my favourite strokes to do.
Yeah, what do you like about them?
Just I like freestyle because you like it's an easy stroke, not a difficult stroke like butterfly or anything like that. And where there's also fly, I also do fly because I have a big wingspan. And my wingspan allows me to drag through the water and go fast, if that makes any sense.
Whenever I watch butterfly, it looks so difficult to do. Do you find it difficult?
No, not really. You just got to practice and try and reach your goal. It depends on what stroke you're doing.
How do you balance physical training with mental preparation?
My coach helps me mentally prepare and stay calm during major events. And that's how I get through it.
How do you mentally prepare?
Like I said before, I keep myself motivated. I keep myself motivated and I keep myself on track to focus on what I'm doing.
How do you stay calm when you're under pressure?
Sometimes I just pray to Jesus Christ for guidance and to help me keep calm during like major events, and through his guidance he can help me.
Can you tell me about some of the major events that you've competed in?
I've competed in nationals, states, wide bay, yeah, and so on.
And how did you go in those events?
I did pretty good. I got a couple of gold medals, a couple of silvers, a couple of golds.
Congratulations.
A couple of bronze. Yeah.
What's your strongest stroke, freestyle or butterfly?
Ooh, I would say freestyle is my strongest stroke. I'm really good at freestyle.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your typical training routine?
My typical training routine is... we start off with these warm-ups where we go 200 freestyle, 100 fly, then it goes on and on.
So you're getting up at 4:30 in the morning. So how many times a week are you swimming?
Almost every day of the week, 5 days.
That's a pretty big training routine you've got there.
Yeah.
Tian, you're swimming at a competitive level and you have goals in the future to go to the Commonwealth Games, Paralympic Games. Can you tell me what your goals are?
My goals to reach my full potential in going to the Paralympic Games and the Commonwealth Games, because I have been dreaming of it for a pretty long time, and I want to make my mum and dad proud by going to them events like Commonwealth and Paralympics.
You said you're a freestyler and a butterflyer. Yeah. They'll be the two strokes you'll be focusing on?
Yeah, those are the two strokes I'll be focusing on.
When you are in the pool, what do you think about as you're going up and down those lanes?
I think I have to put a little bit more effort in instead of not putting enough effort in.
What do you think you need to do to achieve those goals between now and those games?
I just need to stay motivated. And if I keep staying motivated, then I'll reach my goal eventually.
I know that swimmers get up very early in the morning. That must be pretty hard to stay motivated sometimes. How do you get out of bed?
Well, mum and dad come get me. They say for me to get out of bed really quick. I wake up at 4:30, then I reckon I reach, I wake up at 4:30, then training starts at 5:15 until 7 o'clock.
Yeah. How do you stay motivated during challenging times?
I stay motivated during challenging times through watching videos about Jesus Christ.
Can you tell me more about that?
He keeps my motivation up there for me to stay on track and then reach my goal I want to reach through his strength and his guidance.
And that was 17-year-old Tian Holt from the Sunshine Coast, a young, aspiring swimmer whose dream it is to participate on the world stage in swimming. If you'd like to follow Rachel or Tian's journey, follow the links in the episode transcript. And for more stories from our Queensland Paralympians, stay tuned to Choice and Control for more great podcasts coming soon.
Thanks for joining us at Choice and Control, a Carers Queensland podcast. If you've enjoyed this podcast episode, please take a moment to leave a rating and review and share it with your community. For more information about the National Disability Insurance Scheme or Carers Queensland, contact us online at www.carersqld.com.au or call us on 1300 999 636 or head to Facebook and look for Carers Queensland NDIS.